Hello and welcome to this special episode of Knowledge Engaged, a podcast of the University of Nottingham's Institute for Policy and Engagement. Black History Month is in October, and this year the theme is Proud to Be. And today we're speaking to Maria Aruda, the chair of the University of Nottingham's BAME Network and the head of researcher development at the Researcher Academy. We're going to be examining the research pipeline at the University of Nottingham and discuss its effect on relevant and equitable research which integrates the Black experience. Welcome, Maria, to the podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure being here, Amanda. Thank you very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you've been working on in the past few years?
Yes, Amanda. Well, I've been a bit of a roller coaster of a career, always exciting. So I used to say that I've been through every possible career inside a higher education institution. So I started back in Brazil as a technician. So I did a technical high school course in biotechnology. And when it was time to go to university, I was hired by the State University of Rio de Janeiro. That was one of my choices. So I did my BSc in biological sciences and pharmacology alongside my technical career. Then I did my PhD. Then I had my small research group that grew and I became senior lecturer there. Then I went to the Brazilian Ministry of Health, to the pharmaceutical arm of the Brazilian Ministry of Health, where I was head of research and head of the academic department, actually. And shortly after that, I came for a sabbatical in Nottingham to spend 1 year at the university. This 1 year became 10 years.
Oh,
and going. So I was an academic at the School of Life Sciences, running a transatlantic program. Then I realized I was too involved with management. So I became a research development manager at the Central Research and Innovation. And more recently, I think that I fulfilled all my dreams, put them all together and applied for this post of head of researcher development that brings together everything that I always wanted and always loved about higher education, people development, and pushing research forward.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. It's a remarkable journey, isn't it? And you're also head of the BAME network at the university. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, so being chair of the BAME staff network has been a real privilege. So the network was created and chaired for 12 years by Dr. Val Watson, that used to be our head of counseling service. And she was departing and, you know, it was time for people to put themselves forward. And I never thought that I would be elected chair of the network, but I thought it was the right thing to do to show that I wanted to contribute more practically to the network and its members. So, yeah, the network is a space of championship of and advocacy and peer support for the Black and Asian and minority ethnic staff across the university. And I had a bit of a baptism of fire because the month that I started shadowing Val to subsequently become chair of the network, we had the murder of George Floyd and COVID. And when we realized that COVID impacted particularly and in a disproportionate way, members of the BAME community. So it was a time that the network members, they really came together, but a time of a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, and should I say a lot of anger as well, because I think that all these things, the Black Lives Matter movement and the concerns about the health of Black and Asian people in UK, they are magnifying lenses over the problems that have been bubbling under the surface for so many decades or centuries, I would say. But I think that we managed to transform the pain in action. So it's interesting to see that we are observing one of the most active periods of the BAME staff network. And I'm very honored to be supporting this.
Yeah. You're chair of the BAME network, you're head of the Researcher Academy. What are some of the insights that have cross-pollinated from these two roles? And when you think about research by Black academics at the university, what sort of insights have you seen in the Black experience of a Nottingham researcher?
I think that academia has been quite homogeneous throughout centuries. And What I can see is the contribution of people that think differently. People can only think differently if they experience different things throughout their lives. So if we think, for example, that the world that we've got today has been designed for less than 10% of the world population, we've got a problem, isn't it? Because male, white, Western people, they comprise less than 10% of the population. So it's almost like everyone else needs to adapt things to their particular needs. So there is this very nice book that is about women in science, but it's a very good analogy that says, for example, everything that is designed by men does not cater for women needs. And the author talks about safety belts. If safety belts were designed by a woman, it would never be the way it is because it does not protect fully the female anatomy. So we can see that happening for gender. We can see that happening to race as well. So, for example, for years and years, nobody thought there was anything wrong about having a cohort of participants in a clinical trial comprised only by white people or European people. We don't see a problem as well when we get to our university department and we see that there are only people, we see, but people usually don't see people that are used to occupy these spaces. They don't see a problem in having a department that does not correspond to society as it is. First with gender, and now people are starting to look for ethnicity as well. So all these things have an impact on science and its outputs. So it's not a joke, but something that I used to say that we've got an amazing solution for erectile dysfunction. And we are still struggling to find ways of controlling malaria that kills millions of children and, you know, people in Africa. Mm-hmm. So because it's not seen as a priority. And COVID changed a bit this dynamic, didn't it? Because it was a communicable disease that was not confined to the global south. Imagine COVID confined to the global south. Do you really think, even having more devastating effects than it had in the global north, can we really think that we would have the advancement of a vaccine solution so quickly? So I think that's what having this variety of people with different experiences, and ethnicity is one of the most striking experiences that one can have. And because of colonialism and imperialism, it's got many layers of oppression, of marginalization. It's important to have these voices inside academia. There is this expression in ecology that is called the green deserts. So when devastating big areas where the biodiversity was really rich, people say, oh, no, it's enough to just roll out a program to plant loads of eucalyptus or any other plant that grows a lot and have loads of leaves. So the problem of oxygen and all that's going to be sorted out. And these are places that ecologists, they call the green deserts, because you don't have the diversity and everything that, and the richness that diversity brings. Mm-hmm. And I think that academia is a bit like this. You know, it has been for centuries a bit like the green deserts. So when we see Black academics, and we are talking about Black, but we've got amazing Asian colleagues, East Asian colleagues doing really, really amazing research. But just to focus on, because it's Black History Month, on the Black academics, we've got Black colleagues working with student well-being in sub-Saharan Africa. We've got colleagues working in the context of cook stoves and how it affects the contribution for gas emission is irrelevant, but how does it affect people's health inside those houses, inside those spaces? We've got now the Center for Black Studies really taking off, thinking about critical race theory, not only to problematize the issues, but to seek solutions of emancipation of the community. And we've got many, many colleagues that work in more traditional areas of research, but they bring their special, unique outlook because of their life experiences, so they can see beyond academia, they can see beyond. I think they are more equipped to see beyond our immediate environment. And when thinking about things, what is the impact that it's going to have in other communities? So bringing a lot of what has a field that has run quite a lot that is responsible research and innovation to really integrate as many people as we can into the research from the very early stages, even if it's very, very basic fundamental research.
It's a wonderful thing that this consciousness is there and this process of really integrating Black voices and even voices of people of color into research from the inception stages down till policy impact and policy engagement. And it's great that this is already happening and there's some of these fantastic researchers working in these areas. But what sort of support do they receive? I mean, we know the real inequalities of the system. What kind of support do they receive, especially in the context of the University of Nottingham? And also, what more would you say should be happening at the university to fully support equitable research?
That's an amazing question, Amanda. And I think that many of us are really fighting in a productive way, working together to address these inequalities. The university went through a very interesting soul-searching exercise that was the Race Equality Charter. And it was not the first time that the university applied for this charter and the second time it was successful. And I believe that the success, and it's important to say that it was led by Stacey Johnson, that is an associate professor in health sciences and member of the BAME staff network, but a very, very accomplished academic that creates the framework for reverse mentoring. And Professor Sarah Sharples, that was our previous PVC for equality, diversity, inclusion in people. And something that people always say, oh, we don't have the data. Now we have the data. We have the institutional data showing how damaging, dreadful is the inequality across our university. So we can't hide anymore. And Nottingham is not particularly worse than other universities. It might even be better than other universities, but the oppression is there. So what is interesting, and I think that it's important not to see how many people you've got in different stages of their career, but the trajectory. Because obviously, Black people have been underrepresented, so the number is going to be smaller. But what happened when this person gets to a university in an academic or in any other post, in any other career? What happens to them during this time? And it's very clear that the trajectory of a Black person inside the higher education institution, it's much more difficult to get to the higher levels, let's say for the sake of argument, of an academic career. So we've got level 4 that has like teaching associates and research fellows, and level 7 that are the professors. We've got very, very little representation of Black people in the higher levels. And we can see that our uptake of Black academics is small. It could be much better. But the ones we hire, they stay in that area for a long time in precarious contracts with much less chance of having a permanent contract, much less chance to progress to in the higher levels of the career. Mm-hmm. So we see that the system has been failing systematically these people. And it's a discussion that is beyond the University of Nottingham. So post the Parliamentary Office for Science Technology last year, they organized a series of events and I took part in some of them I think it was not to understand because the message is very clear, but more to say, you know, we hear you, I think. And it's important to see funding agencies like Wellcome Trust and UK Research Innovation, UKRI, thinking about this as well. But I think the frustrating thing is that the pace of change is not really striking. You know, it's taking time and there is a demand for patience of the community. But it's very difficult to have patience when you are talking about someone's lives, livelihoods and career. So I'm sure that we can do better. And there are things that we can do. And that's my area because I'm in the researcher development side of things now. There are things that we can do to address some of the systemic issues that the Black population, particularly Black British population, is facing. We've got a very interesting scientific initiation program for undergrads in the school that's starting the School of Life Sciences, and hopefully it's going to roll out across the university to put these people from disadvantaged backgrounds inside the labs. And understanding, not only being inside the lab, but understanding their role in changing science, in making science more inclusive, more diverse, more tuned in with what the society needs. In the Research Academy, the colleagues that lead the BBSRC-funded PhD program, they've got the Amplify program that is all about increasing the participation of Black British students. So they go through a mentorship process because there is no deficit from the Black community. Mm-hmm. This deficit is in the environment that the Black community, particularly the Black youth, enjoys mm-hmm. today. They feel ostracized. They feel neglected. They are not encouraged to pursue some careers. And it's our job to make the flowers, they can grow all the same. The environment is what needs changing. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we are trying to address. But the scale of it is still quite disappointing, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've already answered this question, but I'd just like us to speak a little bit about research to policy pipeline. We already know that if in the research pipeline, we already have a deficit of Black academics, that will translate to the research to policy pipeline. But I want to get a little bit of your insight as to their experience in influencing policy that is specific to being a Black academic or having your research that it's focused on issues that affect Black people, and what can be done about any issues in that area? How can we make sure that we're integrating these voices in the policy spaces as well?
That's an amazing question. And I think that, there is an invitation in this question as well for the Institute to continue the amazing work of integrating the academic voices and bringing them to policymaking. I think that the difficulties, the lack of sponsorship for Black academics, they've got impact that goes beyond being able to secure a grant. There is the impact on policymaking as well. And what we realize as well is almost like there is a space for Black academics to thrive. You can do that. When it comes to some aspects of health sciences, we are quite more comfortable for you to deal with it. When it comes to, a more high-tech space, yeah, maybe. So something that happens quite a lot, and I can say, having lived a bit this experience, when you don't receive as much support as your counterparts, instead of being more ruthless with your time, you do the opposite, that is spreading yourself almost too thinly. So Black academics are always the ones that are in committees and they are active in the BAME staff network and they do, they are involved with teaching and they do all these things to see if it improves their profile and actually distracts them from their research. So they get more administrative things because they think always that they are not doing enough. Mm-hmm. And the things that are very, very important for their own career sometimes gets neglected because unconsciously they think they need to do more to please or to show their value. So I think that for the Institute to continue what the Institute is doing in bringing this decolonial perspective across our university and work with the BAME staff network and with the different schools and faculties to say we are particularly interested in hearing from academics from Black, Asian, and other minority ethnic backgrounds. So instead of being a detriment to people's career, I think that it's important to show them that it is an asset, the set of experiences, because they are, in this case, non-white. And the same thing goes with gender. It's actually an asset. We need to listen from you. There are things that we don't understand because most of us are white British people. We want the voices of our international colleagues. Mm-hmm. So I think that these are the things that can really make a difference and people can see the diversity, which is great for the university. And the university has been capitalizing a lot on it and could capitalize even more. Mm-hmm. It's to show that, what you do and who you are is important for us. And to start to recognize and even reward potential instead of outcome.
Wow. Thank you very much, Maria. That's a great place to end this. That's really powerful. Thank you so much for speaking to us today.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Knowledge Engaged. If you'd like to find out more about the Institute or the topics covered in this episode, click on the links in the show notes. Thank you.